A Motorsport Podcast Network production.
Welcome back to Dust Trails by Rally Sport Magazine. This is where we chat with some of the sport's leaders about their careers. In part two of our exclusive chat with WRC Rally commentator Colin Clark, we delve into the forthcoming changes in the series as they move away from hybrid power. The Scotsman has some strong views on the disappearance of Rally Australia from the WRC calendar and talks of the great challenges facing one of his favourite events, Targa Tasmania. It's a wide-ranging chat that is a must-listen to for all rally fans. There aren't too many more passionate about the sport than Colin Clark, and this comes out in spades in our Dust Trails podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast. That will help spread the word and make sure that you see all the latest episodes as they drop. Enjoy.
Let's get to a few of those opinions, though. And one of the ones that came to mind for us was the difference that VW made when they were in the World Rally Championship. I mean, they came in 2013. The WRC had just lost its promoter and moved to Red Bull's promotional activities. And VW clearly did so much for the sport of rallying in that time, and it probably gave you some fantastic memories as well.
Yeah, VW were brilliant, and VW saved rally radio. I remember, Beck's night at the end of every year, nearly every year, it was a struggle. It was a struggle to secure the budget for the following year. And, I remember it was December. We had nothing for the next year. It would have been Australia, I suppose, but we'd come from Australia. And we were trying really hard to get the budget. And we had a phone call from Volkswagen. They said, come across to, where were they based? I can't remember where they were based. Somewhere in Germany, obviously. So Beggs and I got on a plane one Tuesday morning, I think it was, from Birmingham, ended up in a snowy Germany, went to see the marketing guys at Volkswagen, and they said, yeah, there's the money for you. For rally radio, we will sort it out with the other stakeholders. And it was like, wow. We walked out, had a little glue vine at the Christmas market and thought, yeah, these guys, and literally, there's the money for you. We will sort it out. Radio is integral to what we're doing in motorsport, in rallying. We will sort it out. And they did sort it out. And Volkswagen were, the guys that ran Volkswagen, Jos Kapito for me was was a bit of a visionary. And he was a bit of a maverick as well, liked to do things his own way. But I remember him basically calling a bit of a strike with the drivers at stage ends. They didn't like the way things were going with the promotion. This was 10 years ago. And he said, right, he said, this is very straightforward. We just won't talk to the TV crews at the stage ends. And it didn't last long, as you would imagine,
sure.
because certain people in charge of the TV at the time absolutely had kittens and whatever that issue was, and I can't remember the exact details of the issue, it was very, very quickly resolved. But from a sporting sense, Volkswagen, a lot of people might say, oh, your dominance is a terrible thing. And dominance can be destructive and it can be negative. But Volkswagen came along with an incredibly professional setup. They put a lot of money into promotion. They were like Toyota back in the days. Back in the 90s, they would pay for TV programs. They would pay for journalists to come out. They would pay for promotion. They understood that, rallying is expensive. To go rallying costs you tens, if not hundreds of millions. You then have to make the most out of it. You then have to maximize your investment. And to do that, you have to engage media. And Volkswagen were very, very similar. They more or less did the job of the promoter for the time that they were in the championship. It was quite some effort from Volkswagen. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed Capito. I enjoyed the fact that he was different. I don't think he got enough support around the service park at times. He wanted to completely shake up the idea of the power stage. And it was radical. It was absolutely radical, the solution that he was coming up with. But he was basically laughed out of the room. It was very sad because it was what was needed. And I think we're seeing that now. I think now this year, particularly with all that's going on this year with, President Ben Salam getting involved with Robert Reed and David Richards and his working group getting involved. We understand that, okay, that's our technical part, but it's also part of their remit is you know, how do we promote this sport? Are we doing things right? You know, Capito understood that 10 or 12 years ago. He was ahead of his time. He understood things needed to change. He understood we needed to move with the times. And, you know, we're in a sport, Pete. You're part of a wonderful rallying dynasty. You know, we're in a sport where there are a lot of traditionalists around, as you know, and it's difficult at times to change things we're rallying. You know, there are a lot of very, very respected people around rallying who want to see things staying as they are. And when you propose anything that's different, you know, you have to do it in such a way as to appeal to and appease, you know, maybe a generation that don't want to see things changing. And that was Capito's problem at the time, was there were just too many traditionalists around who said, nah, that's too far removed from the DNA of rallying. But his principle was correct. We needed to do something very different. It was just his execution that wasn't right. But Volkswagen were great. They were absolutely great for the sport. They brought a lot of money in. They brought a lot of coverage to the sport. You know, they gave us, obviously, Sébastien Ogier and his complete dominance. It was a combative Ogier that we saw in those days because, you know, he was just too good. And it didn't matter what the FIA did. And they changed the rules to try and stop him from winning. And he still won. And it was great. I loved it. And it's a shame. It was a real blow when they left. And I think a blow that we're still struggling, to be honest with you, to recover from. We've not had a new manufacturer back in, you know, to replace them. We'll promise that with hybrid, and it just never happened. So I think we're still struggling post Volkswagen.
Yeah, well, I'll get to the rules shortly, but another event that's disappeared, and obviously a sad one for us, is Rally Australia, which hasn't been run since 2018. And recently I've been doing some research on the first couple of years of the event when the Western Australian government got involved and Gary Connolly got involved. And the event obviously won the Rally of the Year for three or four times. They were pioneering in things like super special stages and the cloverleaf format and lots of other things. Sadly, Rally Australia has just fallen off the perch and, from what we understand, is unlikely to appear again.
It's not coming back, Pete. It's not coming back, not in the short term. And it verges on the criminal. Not literally criminal. But, you know, I am flabbergasted, to be honest with you. I've just spent a few days with some people in South Australia. And you have one of the best rally communities in the world. And somehow, and for some reason, there are certain elements of the Australian rally community that just want to torpedo the whole thing. Now, that might not be rallyists. It might be, we might be talking about potentially legislative type people. But, you know, I had 25 minutes, half an hour, with an 82-year-old rally organizer this week. And the guy was more forward-thinking than just about anyone I've talked to in rallying. And he gets it. He gets it. He gets what rallying's about. He gets where rallying has to go. He's 82 years old, still running an event, still running two events, maybe three events. You know, a volunteer who absolutely gets it. And you think, how can we have people of this caliber, of this mindset, and not have a round of the World Rally Championship? How can we have events like the Heartland Rally, like the Alpine Rally? How can we have events like that with a community like that and an atmosphere like that and a willingness and a level of expertise that you see at every level, from the organizers to the marshals to the teams, and not have a round of the World Rally Championship? Well, there's no will. There's no will at the very highest level, and that's the problem. And it is, in my view, criminal. Because, you know, it makes you ask all sorts of questions, you know, because for a sport to have a future, it has to have a headline event. You know, golfing, for example, in Britain has the British Open every year, you know, and you go to any golf course the week after the British Open and it's full of kids guttering around, but who want to play golf. You try to get a tennis court the week after Wimbledon, a public tennis court in the UK, you try to get on one, you can't. It's full of kids wanting to play tennis. You know, if you want a sport to thrive and survive, you need to have a headline event. And that is where, again, I ask the question. And it's, you know, and I ask the question because I'm quite heavily involved, or have been over the past few years, in Targa, and I'm at a loss as to what is going on with Targa, not from a Targa organizational point of view, but from the very highest levels of Australian motorsport. You know, do they actually want to have... I talked to someone from the FIA last year, very, very, very high up in the FIA, about Targa. And he said, Colin, it's very simple. Targa is one of the world's iconic motorsport events, and we must protect our iconic motorsport events. You'd never guess that. You'd never guess that when you come here to Australia and you listen to some of the nonsense that gets said about Targa, some of the nonsense that's been written about Targa. You'd never guess it. And if there's no will, if there's no one championing a return of Rally Australia, it isn't ever going to happen, because the whole environment, the whole marketplace for rounds of the World Rally Championship is rapidly changing. You know, we've had notice overnight that Spain is coming back with a bucket load of cash to go to the Canaries.
Yeah.
We have Ireland coming in potentially next year with a bucket load of cash. We have Saudi Arabia with a wheelbarrow full of cash to be part of the championship. You know, what Australia has, and you mentioned it earlier on, you know, everyone loves coming to Australia because it is a brilliant event. Coffs Harbour, for me, was the perfect template for a round of the World Rally Championship. You know, you had an airport 5 minutes from the service park. You had a wonderful service park. You had a town that was big enough to accommodate everyone, but a town that wasn't so big that the event got lost. The town embraced, you know, not to a man and a woman, but more or less the town embraced the championship. You had a local MP who was passionate about it, you know, passionate about the event, and would support it, you know, tooth and nail. He would fight tooth and nail to make sure that event went on. And then you had, you know, a state legislator who was standing up at the end of year award ceremony saying, we've got the money for this. You know, we've got the money. We will commit to a round of the championship. And that was the last time we were there. How can that happen? How can that happen? You know, I just don't know. You know, there were people, again, who didn't like the fact it was Coffs Harbour. They wanted to be in Sydney. They wanted to be in Melbourne. Get real. Get real. You know, rallying is not for major cities. We were in Auckland last year. It was bloody awful. It was bloody awful where the service park was. Now, I'm not knocking the New Zealand organisers, because they also do a great job. And rallying in New Zealand is fantastic. But there was pressure put on them to be in Auckland, to be in city centres. And, you know, this for me is an absolute nonsense. The fact that, you know, that there is this constant push for rallies to be based in major cities. And it just, nah. You know, rallying in major cities going forward do not work. Do not work, you know. Somewhere like Coffs Harbour, perfect, perfect. And, you know, there were those who didn't like it, those who expressed a dislike of it. And they, unfortunately, were the ones who held sway. And we went away from Coffs Harbour with certain people saying it was awful. And we never went back. What an absolute disgrace. Okay, the last one we lost because of the fires. That was tragic. Mm. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Rally Australia, you know, you put on the best events in the world, the best rally events in the world. Two of my favorite events anywhere in the world are in Australia. And if I could just do, if I could only do two events in my life for the rest of my life, they would both be in Australia. You know, I would do the Alpine, I would do the Heartland Rally, and I would be happy, because there is just a wonderful group of people who organize them, wonderful group of marshals who turn up for nothing, for hour after hour, day after day. They give up weeks of holiday, and they do it with a smile, and they do it with a level of professionalism that you don't see in too many other countries. And the events themselves are just what rallying should be, you know, fun and exciting and adventurous, and then you have a certain group of people who just seem to want to just you know suppress the sport at every turn, and I don't get it. I don't get it, Pete. I'm sorry, I might be slightly biased with that, but I really don't get it.
And it seems that Rally Australia and Rally New Zealand are in a similar boat in terms of not getting an event in the near future, but for different reasons. From what you're indicating, a lot more needs to be done by Motorsport Australia to actually want to get the event back, whereas in New Zealand, Motorsport New Zealand would love the event back tomorrow, but they don't have the finances or other areas to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally different. Listen, I know that there's a group of, I won't even call them stakeholders, but there are a group of benefactors who would be quite willing to support Rally Australia, quite willing to support it with their own money, I suspect. But there has to be more than that. There has to be the will. And that, as you say, is quite different from New Zealand. I'm in danger of saying things that I probably shouldn't say. But, you know, it's a perplexing situation. And it's one that makes you ask questions for the long-term future of the sport in Australia. And that would be wrong because Australia is you know, you talk about countries like, you know, Finland and Great Britain as being, you know, real kind of heartlands for rallying. Well, you know, in some ways, so is Australia. You know, Australia is responsible for quite a few of the innovations that we still use in rallying. You know, some of the very best people that have been around. And, you know, you talked about Gary Connolly. You know, Michael Massey, you know, okay, the poor guy was pilloried for his Formula One involvement. But, you know, Michael Massey is a rally man, and he was a very, very fine rally man in his time. And, you know, when all that controversy over the Formula One Abu Dhabi Grand Prix was kicking off, I thought, great, maybe we'll get Michael back in rallying because he can do a job for us. Sadly, that never happened. He went somewhere else, didn't he? Can't remember where. But Australia has got a huge amount to offer the rally world. And it won't happen unless there is a concerted effort from everyone to make it happen. And that really starts at the top. And there seems to be very, very, very little interest in it at the top. And it just won't happen. Just won't happen until we get someone involved at the highest level who is a fan of rallying, who sees the value of rallying. Here's the thing, Pete. Here's the thing with rallying. And I firmly believe this. And maybe I'm seeing it through slightly rose-tinted glasses. But, you know, there's a generation, and I see this in my kids, and you probably see it in yours. Okay, you know, the young generation these days are completely obsessed by screen time, and it's dangerous, and we know that. And, you know, there's a generation, our generation, of parents who are trying their best to introduce their kids to other things that don't involve iPhones, iPads, laptops, whatever. Yep. You know, rallying is the perfect antidote. It is the perfect antidote to all of that. You know, it's an adventure. You know, and there is definitely an element in the younger generation who are looking for adventure. You know, they're looking to do things differently. They're looking to be the anti-screen time kids. You know, they don't want to be the followers. They want to be the setters, you know, the trend setters. And rallying offers that. Rallying offers adventure. It offers, you know, excitement. It offers the chance for people to get together as families, to go out and experience things together as families. And that will only grow. The desire for that amongst the younger generation will only grow. And rallying is wonderfully placed to say to that generation, yeah, get involved, get involved. You know, okay, we don't expect everyone to be rally drivers or mechanics or service crews, but there's all sorts you can do around rallying. Even if it's just being a rally fan and just being a rally spectator, it offers something different. You will go to some of the most incredible places in the world and you will see your parts of your own country you've never seen. And you will just enjoy time with people that you want to be with, people that you love, that you never speak to on a daily basis, you know, because of this obsession with screen time. You know, we can offer something different. And, you know, right now, unless we have, a legislative kind of body who see that potential and who want the sport to grow, then we'll never take advantage of that. And that's what I fear most about rallying in Australia.
Tasmania is a perfect example of that, isn't it? Oh. Where it's a once-a-year event in Tasmania that brings the community down there together, brings so much infrastructure in terms of money and hotel rooms and all that sort of stuff to the state over that period. But the event hasn't been run for two or three years now, and certainly it's not been run this year.
It's a critical year for Targa. You know, there's an awful lot. Mark Perry is working tirelessly behind the scenes to address the issues that have been put forward that need to be addressed. And there are certain elements that absolutely need to be addressed. But you know, but Targa, yeah, it's an event that is special. It harks back to the, you know, in terms of the adventure, you know, and put aside for one minute the kind of you know, in terms of the rules and the regulations and the technical side of it. And yeah, there are certain elements that do need to be looked at, and that's absolutely correct, and it must always be priority. But you know, there are others who just don't like the event. They just don't like it. They don't like the fact that there is an element of risk which is greater than other sports. But that's always going to be the way. You either back motorsport or you don't back motorsport. And you know, statistically, motorsport, yeah, there's a risk, but you know, there are many, many other sports out there where the risk is higher. But what Targa Tasmania brings is just something really special. And you know, Targa Tasmania, you look at when it started. It started in 94, was it? 94, something
maybe
around then.
Yeah, maybe 92 even.
92. And you chart, and the two, and they're not, you have to link them. You chart the rise of Tasmania as Tasmania used to be, as far as I'm aware, seen as kind of the poor relative of Australia. Oh, geez, you know, what would you want to go to Tasmania for? And now Tasmania is your right up there on anyone's list. Anyone that comes to visit Australia, yeah, let's go to Tasmania. Your wonderful food, wonderful scenery, great people, just a great adventure to go to Tasmania. And, you know, and you can say that Targa Tasmania has played a fairly big part in that, you know, in how that Targa Tasmania has projected, you know, the state of Tasmania to the world, has played its part in lifting the whole state and the appeal of the state and allowing people to discover the state. You know, Tasmania was probably, and I'm sure it was, always a brilliant, wonderful place to visit. But the story needed to be told, and Targa Tasmania has been part of that storytelling process. And, you know, it's telling that the state government are still firmly behind Targa Tasmania. You know, the businesses that rely on Targa Tas for, you know, a week of really good business at a quiet time of year, they're firmly behind the event. Tarmac rallying in Australia has quite a few hurdles to overcome, I would imagine. And it's a shame because your tarmac rallying is really where the grassroots of rallying's at. You know, most kids who start rallying will start with, you know, something like a Gymkhana or something like that, you know, and you know, single venues. It's the cheapest way to do it. You've got a few tires on the car and away you go. And, you know, the setup costs aren't too bad. The repair costs aren't too bad. You know, if you try to completely destroy and get rid of tarmac rallying, you're effectively saying, well, actually, long term, what's the implication of that? The implication is that rallying as a sport will die. And I get the feeling that there might be one or two people who have that as a long-term agenda. Maybe I'm being a little unfair, but I get that feeling.
And it's unquestionable that Targa Tasmania has had a really bad run of tragic accidents in the last few years. But when we look back, even last year, your great mate Craig Breenham, and he died in an accident that was 30 kilometres an hour. So it's not always the speed. It's there are lots of things that come into play.
So many things that come into play. You know, you are right. It would be madness to ignore the fact that there has been a run of bad accidents and certain issues that definitely need addressing. And everyone is willing to address those issues. But at the end of the day, motorsport does have its risks. And we either accept that or we don't. You know, if we accept that, then you do what you can to make it as safe as possible and for the sport to progress. If we don't accept that, we just knock everything on the head, all motorsport on the head. And that's not an option, because there are certain motorsports. I've just taken a drive around Albert Park, and there ain't no way in the world that all tarmac motorsport is going to be banned ever in Australia, because there are hundreds of millions of dollars being made out of Albert Park right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
you know, even Formula One is dangerous. Look, you know, I mentioned I worked at a tobacco company. In those 3 years, right to the start of this podcast, where I talked about the initial 3 years with BAT and the billion-dollar investment, at the end of every year, you know, the poor guy who was responsible for the brand, and remember the first year was the 555 and the Lucky Strike brand.
Yeah,
you know, he had to stand up and in some way, you know, offer some sort of justification for the we'll call it $350 million a year. These are American dollars, not Aussie dollars. So half a billion Aussie dollars a year. He had to stand up and offer some sort of justification in terms of, you know, maybe a media return. Remember?
Yeah, yeah.
But this is awful. This is an awful thing, and it's a terrible story to tell, and I'm sorry to recount it. But there was a massive spike in media return for Rally Australia 1 year, and I sat in on this meeting. I can't even remember why I was there. I shouldn't have been there, but I sat in on it, and the poor guy had to somehow explain that massive spike in media return was because of a terrible fatality at Rally Australia, not Rally, the Australian Grand Prix.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a marshal. It was a marshal that was killed. And it resulted in a spike of media return. And it was a very strange thing. It was a very strange thing. But you know, my point is that, you know, that any sport has its inherent dangers. And Formula One isn't clearly immune to it. No motorsport is. So we either back motorsport or we don't. And if we back it, we find ways of making it safer, making it more acceptable, you know, in terms of environmentally, sustainably acceptable. And there are many, many innovative ways of doing that. Don't necessarily involve pure electrification, you know. And there are other things we need to look at, you know. There's the environmental impact of rallying. All of these things need to be looked at. But, you know, there needs to be a will to look at those things. You know, and if there's no will to look at them, then unfortunately that just means one thing. It means that we're going the wrong way. And eventually the wrong way ultimately ends in the sport just being unsustainable.
Yes.
But we're not there yet. We're not there yet. That all sounds a bit doom and gloom. We're not there yet. And thank goodness, you know, you have a wonderful, wonderful, as I've said, a wonderful community, motorsport and particularly rallying community in Australia. And, you know, while there are certain people involved, you know, our sport is in, at a event level, our sport is in the finest of fine hands.
At the WRC level, where you do most of your work, there's some major changes next year with, I guess, the FIA has pretty much fallen on their sword and they've done away with the hybrid system for next year. How do you see that playing out?
Yeah, look, it's a difficult one, you know, and I'm not sure. I've had a few weeks to think about it, and I'm still not sure. I'm still trying to work out the benefits of getting rid of the cost benefit, clearly. Is there with the hybrid, and there was an inequity with it, the hybrid system, in that, you know, what have we had, 2 years or 3 years of it now?
3 years.
3 years, and it's still, you know, it still doesn't seem to be able to do what it's supposed to do. You know, we still hear way, way too often about hybrid failures. So, you know, that in terms of it, the inequity of it, for me, yeah, that makes sense. The cost makes a little bit of sense. Will it be enough of a cost saving to entice the privateers back? Maybe, I don't know. But that, you know, for me, that's where we're really struggling just now. You know, there was a time, don't forget, where we just had Ford and Citroën in the championship, but yes, we would still have, you know, 12, 14 cars on each rally because we had the Munchies team, we had the Stobarts team, we had the Citroën Junior team with Rautenbach and various others. You know, there were plenty of privateers. Privateers, you know, they could compete, they could get top five finishes. And it was something that was attractive to privateers. Rallying isn't attractive at the very top level to privateers anymore. You know, when you get guys who are very, very well funded going and doing Dakar cross country rallying because it's better value for money, then you have to start questioning where it all went wrong for rallying. Because rallying, again, you know, one of the unique elements of rallying was that ability of the gentleman driver, the privateer driver, to compete in the same machinery on the same rallies, to get top 10 finishes. That was always part of rallying, and we've lost that. You know, there are no privateers, one privateer these days, one maybe, one or two that occasionally turn up. You know, we saw Bertelli in Sweden, and we'll see Serdaridis in Safari, but you know that we'd have five or six or seven or eight privateers on every rally in the noughties.
And I guess, to be fair, those two guys aren't going to challenge for top five places, are they?
Well, of course they're not. No. They'll struggle, and that's the strange thing. You know, these new cars. You know, you could get a world rally car, and you know, the days that were really good. We had the days of Yazid, we had the days of Sheikh Khaled, of Nasser, And they were almost, you know, and then you would have the, I say, the Munchies boys, the Argentinian boys in there as well, Martin Prokop in there. And yeah, they could compete for sixth, seventh place. Yeah, Rautenbach finished fourth, I think, in Rally Argentina 1 year, about 15 minutes off third, but he finished fourth. You know, and that's something that you'll never take away from Konrad Rautenbach. You know, he finished fourth in a round of the World Rally Championship. Not possible these days. It is not possible. We see guys like Bertelli turning up, and he's been beaten by Rally 2 cars. You know, and okay, you can argue about that. That's in part to do with the fact that the Rally 2 cars are now way better than they've ever been, in part to do with the fact that the Rally 1 cars, you know, unless they're driven at 99.5%, you ain't getting the best out of them. You're getting nothing out of them,
yeah,
in terms of the aero performance and all the rest. But you know, but it's a different sport, and it's a different environment for privateers, and yeah, that's been recognised. And taking the hybrid out brings the cost down, makes it more affordable. Yeah, you know, and it makes it more equitable, as in, you know, it's fairer, I suppose, across the top teams. But is it the answer? I don't know what the answer is. We're at a really difficult time in terms of the technical regulations, because, you know, we get it right and the sport can flourish. We get it wrong, the sport will die. Will die in the next lot of regulations. And I'm really hoping clearly that we get it right. But it's such a difficult situation that the FIA find themselves in, because nobody really knows which way we're going. You know, there's the talk about the Rally 2 Plus cars. Why don't we all go Rally 2 Plus? That's difficult because the manufacturers, you know, there will be no Rally 2 going forward. You know, they're not making the Fiesta anymore. They're not making the Skoda Fabia anymore. You know, what are they homologating? They're not, you know. So Rally 2 Plus would be a two-year fix, Band-Aid at best. You know, where is that second level going to be in the future? We're not really hearing much about that. You know, for me, the answer is for rallying to, and it's a difficult answer to put into practice. But, you know, we have to say to the manufacturers, do what you want. Come with what you want. You know, if you think hydrogen is the way for your performance road vehicles, bring a hydrogen car. If you think hybrid's the way, bring a hybrid car. If you think full electric's the way, yeah, we'll find a way of accommodating you. Or if you think that petrol has got a sustainable future, which it might do, sustainable fuels, not petrol, but your combustion engine with sustainable fuels, with sustainable oils and lubricants and all the rest, that might be the future for motorsport.
Yeah.
But if you think that, then we will give you a formula where you can show off your brilliance, your engineering brilliance, your technological brilliance, and we will come up with a system that allows you to compete, an equalization of technology system that allows you to compete on a level playing field with that diesel engine, that hybrid engine, that hydrogen engine. Now, speaking again to people relatively high up about that, they balk at it. Oh my God, it's too difficult. Yes, it's difficult. It's difficult, but it's not impossible. It is absolutely not impossible to come up with a balance of performance and equalization of technologies formula that allows the manufacturers to come with what they want. Because otherwise, Pete, we're gambling. We're gambling. You know, if the next set of regulations say all electric, and we find that, say, Toyota go hydrogen, someone else goes hybrid, you know, we're saying to them, this championship's not for you. And that's a gamble. And you're gamblers. Gamblers are either idiots. People who gamble are either foolish idiots who just don't understand and who are desperate, or they're very, very wealthy people who can afford to lose. We're in neither of those camps. You know, we haven't got a Formula One style appeal. And for sure, we're not absolutely desperate, you know, so we don't have to take silly gambles. And for me, you know, going with a firm set of regulations that backs one new technology or another is a gamble. And we shouldn't be gambling. We should be saying, you know, what was rally? What heralded the absolute glory days of rally? Well, the ability of manufacturers to showcase their brilliance, to showcase their innovation, their technology, to showcase their vision for the future. Now, if we can do that in rally, if we can achieve that, and yes, it's difficult. Yes, it's really, really difficult. And yes, it'll involve an awful lot of people being awfully unpopular at times. But we can't all be completely popular all the time. But, you know, if we can do that, then we have a platform that manufacturers will absolutely fight over themselves to get involved in. They'll be battling each other to get involved, you know. But I don't see the will to do that. I just don't see the will to do it.
Because our younger listeners probably wouldn't remember or wouldn't know, but there was a time when rallying was more popular than Formula One.
Yeah, allegedly. Allegedly. I think, you could probably back that up. And you know, the story is that at that time, Formula One management actually owned World Rallying. And they, you know, as rallying in the mid to late 90s, I think we're talking about here, as rallying was growing in popularity and Formula One was declining in popularity, there was a concerted effort to change that, you know, to swap it around.
Yeah.
So to stifle the growth of rallying. Rallying has, and for all the reasons I've talked about, you know, for technological reasons, for the ability of manufacturers to showcase what they can do, for the fact that, you know, there's a generation out there that wants adventure, you know, that wants adventure, that wants to get involved in pastimes and hobbies and sports that offer them the opportunity to do something that's a bit more adventurous, that's a bit more fun, that's a bit more involving. You know, rallying has got all the ingredients. It has got all the ingredients. You know, what is it? What do people live for? They live for, you know, they work hard because they want to go and enjoy your adventures in life. They want to go and involve holidays. You know, they want to go and eat good food. They want to spend time with their families. Well, you know, that for me is rallying. All of that is rallying. You know, you can do all of those things in rallying. It ticks a whole load of boxes if we get it right. If we get it right, rallying ticks a whole load of boxes for manufacturers, for fans, for TV and media. Ticks a whole load of boxes. But right now, we're not ticking many of those boxes. They're there. They're there and they're waiting to be ticked, you know, but they've got a big blooming nothing in them. There's not a cross because we've not written it off yet, but there isn't a tick in that box, any of those boxes. And we need to start ticking a few boxes, you know, and we need to start saying, yeah, the sport will have to change. We will have to do things that are maybe a little difficult, and may not actually work. We have to try. And we haven't, you know, we're afraid of making mistakes, of doing things wrong. Well, you know, you talk to any successful businessman and they'll tell you, you know, if you're afraid of making mistakes, you'll never be successful.
Yeah.
You know, because mistakes are what make you. Make you and you grow and you learn and you progress by making mistakes. And we need to make mistakes to move forward. We need to be brave enough, you know. And in some ways, maybe the FI is demonstrating that. You know, they're saying that hybrid was a mistake. And it was. It was a mistake. You know, it was ridiculous. And a lot of people pointed out, Andrea Adamo, at the time said, this is ridiculous. We shouldn't be going down this route. We should be going, you know, Rally 2 Plus. And he again has been proven to be right. He's quite a controversial character, but he speaks a lot of sense. There's not anyone in the world of rallying that is more knowledgeable than Andrea Adamo. And he can divide opinions. But you know, when it comes to the big issues over the past 10 or so years, you look at Adamo's view and nine times out of 10, he's been correct. And it's people like Adamo that need to be involved, I'm afraid. They really do. They need to be involved. And, you know, this equalization of technologies that I've talked about, you talk to Adamo about it, and he'll tell you how difficult it is. But he'll tell you it's possible. It's possible to do. And things like that, I just think we write off too quickly. But we are, if the sport is to survive, we are going to have to accept that. And we are going to have to accept electrification, sadly. And there are a lot of traditionalists who really are very, very much against that. You know, I would like to see a different route taken other than just pure electrification. But you know, I'm not blinkered enough to actually say that we're not going to have to embrace it, because we are. We are going to have to embrace it, because there just won't be any cars there to homologate if we don't embrace it.
Absolutely. In terms of the promotion of the sport, we're in a position now where we've got greater coverage of the World Rally Championship than ever before with the all live coverage. We can watch every stage live with interviews at the end of the stages. But as we spoke about before, we've lost rally radio. Is there a tipping point there where the coverage of the sport is not changing enough? Do we need to look backwards to go forwards?
I totally think we do. You know, rally radio was dropped at a time where audio products on the internet were on an upward trajectory, and they're now stratospheric. You know, podcasting, you know, it's not, we're not talking traditional radio, but we're talking about audio products on the internet. And it is absolutely the growth market in terms of digital media just now. And we don't do anything. We don't do anything in the World Rally Championship to offer that sort of service. And it's wrong. You know, again, it's, you know, my kids, your kids, I'm sure, Pete, audio products are a huge part of their media consumption. And we don't do anything in rallying. How wrong is that? How wrong is that? And I'll tell you why that's happened. And I don't blame the guys. You know, All Live was a great innovation. Great innovation, you know, to be able to, technologically, it's a wonder. You know, you can go to minus 25, minus 30 degrees in Sweden, they can deliver live pictures.
Yeah.
We go to plus 40 degrees in Sardinia, live pictures. It's a wonder. It's a technological wonder. And it's some achievement. But is hour after hour after hour of stage footage, is that what grows the sport? That is the question that has to be asked. And unfortunately, it's the question that isn't being asked, because All Live is seen as the answer. And for me, it's not. And the big issue for me with All Live, there's no issues with the technological delivery. There's no issues with the fact that it delivers to rally fans, existing die-in-the-wool rally fans, by the way. It offers a service that they want, no question about that. But has it stymied a little bit, I think more than a little bit perhaps, innovative thinking in terms of what rally fans or potential rally fans need and want? And I think it has. I think the fact that they've been able to deliver All Live is, well, that's the answer. That's fine. We've done it. We've done it. That's all we need to do. All Live. That delivers everything. I don't think it does. I really don't think it does. I think there's a, you know, there's only certain people that can watch All Live on a Friday. There's only certain people who can watch All Live on a Saturday. You know, quite a few of us, yeah, might be able to put our feet up on a Sunday and watch a couple of stages. But you know what? It's a relatively big investment. You know, there's a cost of living crisis just now, which is very, very real. And people are tightening their belts. There's no question about that. If you've got a subscription to All Live, a subscription to Netflix, a subscription to Amazon, all round about the same cost, and you're having to look at your monthly outgoings, you know, you start making decisions about what you're paying for.
Yes.
And I think it's an issue, and I think it's an issue that needs to be addressed, you know. And to be fair to the promoter, they have upped their social media game enormously over the past 12 months. I still don't think we're doing enough. I really don't think we're doing enough, you know, in terms of addressing what a younger generation wants with media consumption. They do not want to sit and watch hour after hour of anything, you know. They just don't. You see them, they'll sit for hour after hour and watch TikTok, but it's 20-second bites, 10-second bites. And it's slightly baffling to me, but that's what they do. You know, they do not sit and watch hour after hour of one thing. They just don't. You know, so what are we doing to address that? What are we doing to address that? How's our coverage on TikTok? Questionable. How's our coverage in terms of podcasts and audio products? Not questionable, non-existent. What are we doing as a World Rally Championship to innovatively approach the need to convert new fans? Not a lot, Pete.
No,
not an awful lot. Not a lot. And that's an enormous issue. And I think that's the issue that, in fact, I know that's the issue that Thierry Neuville thankfully addressed in Portugal April, May. And he's banged on about it since. He's not let it drop. You know, it's interesting that the FIA have set up their own promotional body. Now, the FIA aren't at all responsible for the promotion of the World Rally Championship. That is the promoter's job. But the FIA have set up a group to look at how we might promote it going forward. And I've had private chats with the very, very highest level, the very highest level of the FIA. And I know that there is a will. There is a will within the FIA, a very strong will to see rallying succeed. And there is an understanding that maybe we're not quite getting it right just now. That's both in terms of the technical regulations and in terms of the way the sport presents itself. So I am hopeful going forward that, that we will see, in terms of how we present the sport, a sport that's fit for, the generation that we need to address. Because right now it's not fit for a generation. The teenagers, the young 20s, it's not what they want. They don't want hour after hour of coverage. They want something different. And we have to find out what it is they want, and we have to try and give it to them.
Certainly do. And it's a tough road going forward for the WRC, because they've got to walk that fine balancing act between providing too much or not enough.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But there is a line to be walked. And as I say, there's a lot they're doing that's right. There's a lot they're doing that's right. I don't want to be too critical of them, but, you've got to ask questions, and if nobody's asking questions, then nothing will change. And thank goodness, people like Neuville, the FIA, are beginning to ask questions, and we are beginning to see change in terms of how the sport presents itself. And yeah, it is difficult, and there's a commercial need, obviously, as well. And you must never forget that. It's not about being altruistic and saying, yeah, look, I'm going to do all of this just for the good of the sport. At the end of the day, the promoter has every right to be driven first by the commercial need. And the commercial need is to make money and to be profitable. Now, you might argue that, well, the two go hand in hand, don't they? The more popular a sport is, the more profitable it is. Yeah, you have to invest in any product to actually get the maximum return from it. I have no issues. I have no issues with the fact that there is money that needs to be made. Profits need to be made. Commercial decisions need to be made. No issues with that whatsoever. But I do want to see more of an acceptance that we actually have to look beyond what we're offering just now, beyond what we're offering. We have to look at ways of presenting the sport that are more appealing. I'd like to see that, because there just seems to be very, very little ability to communicate this, or very little acceptance of that within your decision-making body who present our sport. It's difficult, very, very difficult. And, to the point where people just stop talking about it because they know that the negativity that will come with it, or the issues that will come with it, are just too much hassle to actually, to bring anything up.
Yeah,
which is a shame. It's a shame, because, as I say, debate and a little bit of discourse, and it brings innovation. It brings innovation, and you have to be prepared to debate what you're doing. You have to be prepared to accept that there are opinions out there that are valid opinions, not the same as yours, but they are equally as valid as yours. And you have to be able to, you have to be open-minded enough to accept that there are other ways of doing things that maybe allow you to achieve what you've got to achieve, which is to make a profit, but also at the same time might actually allow you to grow the sport. And I feel that there's a barrier there at times that's very, very, very difficult to get across.
It is. Cole, I want to finish up by just asking a couple of quick questions regarding some of your favourites. And we spoke before about personalities in the sport and how the programs like Drive to Survive have made personalities of the Formula One drivers. And I feel that we haven't done anywhere near enough of that in rallying, and certainly at rallying in all levels, not just in the WRC. Who have been your favourite drivers or people in the sport to interview over your period? Because clearly some are easier than others to work with.
Oh, absolutely. I Per Solberg, obviously. So the Solberg family are quite remarkable. And one of the really, really important things talking about the FIA, Pernille Solberg being appointed to the WRC commission, to head the WRC commission, just genius. She will do a world of good. The Solbergs were always fun. I remember being in New Zealand, going down to, where were we going down to? Fonger Road, I think. To the stage down there with Pernille and with Oliver, when Oliver was about 4 years old and was just gone down for the day, I was doing the radio and they'd hitched a ride with me. You know, the Solbergs I always loved. And you know, there aren't many rally drivers that I didn't like or that I don't like. There was one in the early days who used to scare the crap out of me, and I didn't like him. Armin Schwartz, didn't matter what you asked him, he would always come back and make you feel, you know, like you didn't know anything and you were just the tiniest, littlest, most inconsequential person in the world. At the stage ends, when he was driving for Skoda, he was a nightmare. He was a complete nightmare. He used to quite scare me. But then the minute he stopped, you know, I discovered that Armin Schwartz is the nicest man in the world. He's the nicest guy. And, for me, it just showed the pressure that some of these drivers are under, because Armin is totally bloody delightful. But at the time, he scared the crap out of me. He really scared the crap out of me at stage ends. Duval, I never really understood. Francois Duval, we talked about him earlier on. I never understood him. He was one that always thought he was clearly better than he actually perhaps was. He was very, very, very good. And with the right management, with the right direction, with the right people looking after him, he'd have been a world champion without any question. But he, I just didn't understand him. I didn't understand his lack of ability to comprehend the need for, he just didn't do media. He just didn't like media. And it's like, well, hang on a minute. You know, you need media. If you're going to be a privateer, you need media. You know, he's the only driver who I think actually at one stage end just opened and closed his mouth a couple of times and didn't say anything. But I'm quite convinced, and I have a discussion with Julian Porter about it to this day, I'm quite convinced he said nothing. And that was the type of guy he was. I never understood him. Never, ever understood Francois Duval. He was a difficult character. I loved for sure the Solbergs. But the one I really, really, really love and respect probably more than anyone is Sébastien Ogier. Ogier for me is just a remarkable man, one of the nicest guys I think I've ever met. He is completely focused when there's a job to be done and during a rally weekend, and he speaks his mind and does an incredible job and takes no shit. But away from the rally itself, just, you know, a guy who will quite happily sit and chat for hours with you, you know, and he's just a great guy, just a really, really great guy. And I've always had a huge amount of time for Ogier, respect his talents enormously, but respect him as a person, perhaps more so. There aren't many, you know. You have your moments with certain drivers. I'm having, well, last year, quite a few moments with Hoyt and that. But again, it's just understanding. You've got to put, you know, conversations into context and understand where the drivers are at and understand the pressures they're under and all of those things. But, you know, Tanak has been quite difficult to understand and to get on with and to get much out of in the past few years. But he's been in many ways, situations none of us would want to be in. So I get that. Tanak, again, you know, every time I get annoyed by Hoyt, which this year he seems to have turned the corner, thank goodness. But every time I get annoyed by Hoyt, I just remember back to a wonderful dinner that we had in Italy, just post COVID, 2022. Again, Adamo was there; he'd organised it, and Tanak was there, and Danny Sordo was there, Luca Pedersoli was there, and we had this amazing dinner in this amazing restaurant on a mountain just outside Turin. And when all of us went for a walk afterwards to the top of the mountain, and, you know, Tanak was just the most delightful company, and that is the real Hoyt Tanak. And I think the Tanak that sometimes we see and hear at stage ends, that's the Tanak that's a product of lots and lots of different stresses and situations. The real Tanak is just totally, totally delightful, but at times a little bit trying.
And the pressure, as you say, and I guess a prime example of pressure is Calais Rovanpera. Tell me about the talent that you see in Calais, because obviously he's won the two world championship. He's gone back to a part program this year. Are we likely to see him come back for multiple years? Is it short term? Is he going to go and do other forms of motorsport?
Who knows? Talent, prodigious, absolutely prodigious. You know, as good as anyone, and I include Max Verstappen in this, as good as any motorsport exponent anywhere in the world right now. His level of talent and natural ability is astonishing. Absolutely astonishing. You know, to win the world championship twice by the time he's 22, 23 years old is incredible. You know, and if he'd been doing a full-time season this year, he'd have won it again. You know, and he's one of those drivers that will just keep winning it. I don't know. You know, Toyota tell us that he's got a contract for next year. I don't know. Has he? I don't know. I really don't know. You know, if he goes off and tests, which I firmly believe he will, test a Formula One car, and it turns out he is quick in a Formula One car, who knows? Who knows? Is he going to say, nah, I'm not interested in that? Who knows? Who knows? You know, we know he's into drifting, but drifting isn't the be-all and end-all for him. That's just part of what he does. He's back on motorbikes, I see, as well now. He was very, very talented on motorbikes when he was younger. He can do anything, and he's a young man that knows that. He's a young man that's already made a lot of money in his career, more money than he could ever, ever have dreamed about at 22, 23 years old. He lives in Monaco. He's paid no tax on it, or very little tax on it. So money is clearly not a motivation for him. But he's a young man who's got, he's really switched on. You know, he knows that there has to be a balance in life. And some people might say, well, he's young. He should just be working hard. And as the vast, vast majority of us have to do when we're young, just get our heads down and do things we perhaps don't want to do or like doing, but just get on with it to build our careers. He doesn't have to do that. And he can enjoy being a youngster. And he will go on and do whatever he wants to do. And I, you know, odds are very much on him coming back to a full-time drive with Toyota. But for me, it's not an absolute nailed-on certainty. Because he's got another 8 months this year of just going around having fun. And who knows what we might see him excelling at during those 8 months. And if it's something that he enjoys more than rallying, I don't know. Is it an absolute guarantee he'll be back next year? Well, we're told perhaps it is. So let's hope so, because we can't afford as a sport. You know, he is a character. There's no question about that. He's a different sort of lad. He's fun. He is fun. Him and Yoni together are a fun team. And we need people like that. And we need, you know, Finland, the last few years, you hear the crowds. And, you know, the Finnish people are naturally a little reserved in everything they do, apart from maybe socializing. But they are naturally quite reserved. And to hear the crowds, it was like a football stadium as he was coming through certain sections of the stages. Just astonishing. He's kind of, you know, he's reignited that Finnish passion for rallying and reignited in a way that we've not seen before. And we absolutely need characters that young people can identify with. And Kalle Rovanperä, with his blonde curly mullet and his YouTube videos and his really kind of, you know, boy next door charm about him, you know, everyone can, every kid, every youngster can associate with that, more so than they can say, you know, Sebastian Ogier or Thierry Neuville or Noit Tanak. And those are the people we need in the sport. Those are absolutely the likes of Rovanperä and young Solberg and others are the sort of youngsters that we need and that we need to promote. You know, if we were to achieve what I've talked about a lot, you know, just you're finding a new audience, and we need those people to be there doing what they do best.
Absolutely. Finally, Cole, you've covered rallying all around the world to countries that most of us will never go to. Do you have a favourite memory from everything you've done? I mean, that's a massive question, I know, but is there something that stands out maybe more than others?
Well, the story I told earlier on is right up there, outside the town hall in Hagenau. Yeah, there was Rally GB in 2009 where I was very, very, very sick. And thought that maybe I wouldn't do another rally again.
Yeah, so just touch on that. You obviously had a cancer scare there.
Yeah. No, I had a tumor in my head, my mouth that needed treatment, and I missed 6 months. And I rallied GB. I was coming back for Spain, didn't make it. Coming back for, I can't remember the next one. Coming back for Australia, didn't make that. Wasn't well enough, and probably wasn't well enough to do GB, but with the help of some very, very good friends, managed to do GB. And the final stop line, it was the year that Hirvonen and Loeb were battling it out, and Hirvonen lost by 1 point. And I remember being at that final stop line and just being completely overwhelmed by the fact that I was back doing something which I loved doing and which I thought for quite some time I might never get the chance to do again. So that was you know, a very personal memory of stop lines, you know, and yeah, and I got through that with the help of some very, very, very good friends. You know, you when you're struggling in those moments, you do understand who are the good people in life. Yes. And I'll tell you who one of them is. I won't mention all of them, although they deserve it. Malcolm Wilson, Rally Finland. Marcus Cronholm was leading on the Saturday night, and I was right in the middle of my radiotherapy and feeling just about as shit as it was possible to feel. Really, 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 really feeling pretty bloody awful. And I got an email on the Saturday night from Malcolm, and it was three or four paragraphs, and it was just, you know you're struggling. You know, we're missing you being out here. But I just thought I'd tell you how we're getting on. From Malcolm Wilson.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And, you know, you just... I don't care what anyone says about Malcolm Wilson. It's moments like that that make you realize that there are good people. Really, really, really good people in this sport.
Mm. Yeah, and it makes what you do worthwhile.
Well, it makes you... it makes you understand that what you're doing is the right thing, you know, and that you're doing it right. When people like Malcolm Wilson take the time to do something like that, you just realize, yeah, you know, I want to keep doing this. I want to keep doing this. And it's, you know, a totally different tangent. You know, if anyone's out there, and they, you know, Mick Bray, Big Mick from Targa, who's had a really tough time of it just now. It's not Bray. I forget his surname. That's really bad. Had a really tough time of it. And it's the little things that help. You know, it takes nothing to send an email or to message. It's you know, if your friends are not well, it's dead easy to think, oh, I don't know what to say. I don't know how to do this. Just anything. For Big Mick, I was at Dakar, and Toby Price, what a legend Toby is. I just said to Toby afterwards, look, my mate Mick from Targa, he's not well. He's having a tough time of it. Do you mind saying a few words for him? And he did a piece straight to camera for him. Yeah. And, you know, it lifted him just, you know, even if it's only for that 5 minutes. So it's just, yeah, that's all, a complete different tangent, you know. But yeah, those memories, you know, you sparked one there. I tell you, Pete, thanks, mate.
Yeah. No, Colin.
Yeah, but there've been lots, mate. There've been lots. And you know, the personal ones and just, your achievements, you know, seeing people achieving things, you know, I mentioned Duval winning, or you mentioned Duval winning in Perth, seeing young drivers achieving their lifetime goals. And you know what? Sometimes, again, that's, you know, we're not talking about people winning rounds of the World Rally Championship or even WRC2. It's just guys that have worked really hard. You know, there was a moment in, in a Ojibwe rally last year, the very, very last driver we were interviewing, and the guy was in floods of tears, and he'd finished the rally. He'd spent 6 months building his car. He'd missed the recce because they were just preparing it. He got no sleep the night before. The car was ready literally minutes before the start, and he dreamed of finishing a rally and competing in a rally. And it was just one of the most incredible interviews. And that for me was emotional enough. And that was my highlight of last year. And then a couple of weeks after, sadly, that poor lad was killed in a rally accident.
Oh, really?
And just, you know, it's just a sport of amazing emotions. If you think of poor Craig, you know, we mentioned him earlier. Just the most delightful lad you'll ever meet in your life. And it's amazing highs and amazing lows, you know. One of my great highs with Craig was when he joined us a few times on Rally Radio. He came to Poland and he brought his mate Paddy with him. And Paddy is just an enormous character, wheelchair bound. Paddy's in a wheelchair. And Craig, it was just Craig and Paddy. They came from Dublin on the plane. Craig looked after Paddy, and they came with us. And we just laughed for the whole 5 days we were in Poland on Rally Poland together. It's a sport that gives you the most sensational highs. but also the most gut-wrenching lows, the most gut-wrenching lows. But that is the nature of the sport. And that's why we're all so passionate about the sport, because we appreciate the bravery, the skill of all the boys and girls, the commitment, the dedication, all the boys and girls that take part, and it gives us incredible moments, both the absolute peak and at the trough as well.
It sure does, Colin. It's been an absolute joy to chat with you informally, as so to speak. You have a passion for rallying like just about no other, I'm sure, and it's a passion that reverberates around the world with your commentary. So keep doing what you're doing. The rally world needs people like you, needs more people like you. So thank you very much.
Absolute joy, Pete. Absolute joy. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for listening to Dust Trails. You can support the podcast in many ways. You can subscribe, you can rate our podcast, and you can listen to all our back catalogue of episodes. We hope you enjoyed this one with Colin Clark. We'll be back for more soon as we interview more and more famous names from the world of rallying.